Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear, with the guest host of Jeff Dunlap. We're going to talk about something today, and I want to start off with an eyewitness account about what's going on with our topic back in the past. A great variety of personas among us. Most of them call themselves white men, French Canadians, half-breeds. Their color nearly as dark and their manner wholly as wild as the Indians in whom they countlessly associate. These people with auspicious myth, their whooping and hollering, quarreling, added to the mounted Indians who are consistently dashing into and through our camp, yelling like fiends, barking and baying of savage wolf dogs, the insistent crackling of rifles and carbines render our camp in a perfect bedlam. I am compelled all day to listen to the jargon of drunken trailers. And then there's a word here that I can't pronounce, but it's French words talking bad about trappers. Of Frenchmen run wild and swearing and screaming of our men who are scarcely less savage than the rest, being hated by the detestable liquor which circulates freely among them. This is an eyewitness account, guys, of someone who stumbled into a rendezvous in the 1830s. That's what we're going to be talking about today with Jeff. We are going to be doing some of this on some of the mountain man stuff. And I want to go and get our sponsors out of the way so we can get into this, because we both did quite a bit of research and it's really wild when you look at the history of trapping. So first off, I want to thank our sponsor, Dunlap Lures. Do you know who that is, Jeff?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Are they any good?
Yep.
Is that all you're going to say about yourself is yep?
They work. If they work, like Kid Rock said, ain't bragging if it's true, so, you don't need to brag if it's true also. So, it's a double-edged sword.
That's true. Thank you for being a sponsor, man. And next we'll do F&T. Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Most of us know who they are. Me and Jeff, they both asked us several times to be on their TV show, and it's been a real cool deal for us to be able to do that. They got a great catalog. They're really professional type people that you will be impressed when you deal with. And then we have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. As you can tell, they sell trap tags, and he also has a full line of trapping supplies. He's getting really big into the catfishing stuff. He's got a lot of deer stuff, and he says a lot of it's moving, which is, it's kind of early for all that stuff, but apparently people are getting a little nervous about going to the grocery store and finding no meat. So there may be a preparation going on with some of the catfish and the deer stuff. Then we have Okie Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb's a really cool, just a country guy. He's got a full line of trapping supplies. Sells a lot of meat most years, fur buyer, some years sells glands, buckets. If it's in the trade, give him a call, because he probably has some of it in the back of his building somewhere. And then we have Wildlife Control Supplies, which is pretty much the go-to guys when it comes to animal damage control. They have a full line of trapping supplies for fur and damage. So if you're into that type business, you need some funky traps, they're the ones that's going to be able to get it done for you. So Jeff.
Yeah.
What would you do if beaver prices today were $800 a piece average?
It would be the bodies out here in my backyard, I'd still be skinning beaver. I've even been overgrown.
We get excited when beaver get to 40. That's like, people get super excited about that, and a lot of people live with the mid-20s and are comfortable. When I was doing this research for this show, man, I looked up what was the average price of a beaver back in 1830. And the average price of that beaver was wait a minute, I got this wrong. Yeah, 8 to 12. So let's say $8. When you look at the yearly income, the average yearly income for an American at that time, it was 500. So if you divide 8 into 500, if you got that many beaver, that'd be a yearly income for an average American, which would be about 62 beaver. Which, if you break it down in today's terms, if the average income is right around 50, which it bounces all around there every year, that means they were going after $800 beaver. I can't conceive of that.
No. In like 2013, when they went up, everything was going up. I went and killed, I remember it was 400 and some, and it just about killed me. But that was with a truck, not a horse. I think it was $28 on a beaver. I think that's what it was. It was right around $28. And I mean, and I knew price up, so for $28, I went out there and just about killed myself. Can you imagine what somebody can do for a, you know, if you put, $800 on top of that?
Well, you know, when I've talked to some of the older Western trappers back in, in the towards the late 70s when the coyotes out there were getting about $100 a piece, they said trappers were walking zombies. They were just absolutely mentally and physically wiped out because they looked at every coyote out there as a $100 bill. And a $100 bill back then would be about like a probably $180 coyote today. But $800 for a beaver.
Yeah, that would have been pretty awesome.
I bet you within 2 years, everybody would be struggling to find beaver.
No, they would be like right now. The beaver population here is up so high. It hasn't been like this since I was a kid. I remember going with my dad, and it was like this. We're just beaver popped up everywhere, and there would every one of these beaver be wiped out. Because back in them days, some guys trapped them year round, and you start doing that now, and you put a severe beating on them, which a lot of the timber companies and road commissions would be happy about that, and the DNR, as far as you guys like going to trap them, I like it if the numbers are high.
Well, it's definitely easier, but what you just said brought something to mind, man. They were only doing for felt. They were trapping year round. You're talking summertime beaver. It didn't matter what the fur was.
No, that's what looking up. That's what they said. They would trap them, year round. Not much through the ice, though. I don't blame them because I'm not going trapping a bunch of beaver with Hudson Bay axe. I think some of them guys should have took some of them traps and put them in a time capsule for me and put them somewhere because it would have liked that. But
that'd been cool. So what did you find out about the rendezvous of the mountain men back in the day?
It seems like, there's a contradictory stuff on it, when you're looking at it. But there was one that was started before 1825. They had it, didn't really work out. They kind of run from 1825 to 1840. I grew up going to the muzzleloading shoots, and but you're a kid and you don't take all this in. But what I thought was pretty cool is William Ashley. He started the Rocky Mountain Fur Company, and it was like in 1825, and they had the first. What he did was he went out and was going to go with I think it was Upper Missouri, and was going to go there, and it was already Missouri Fur Company had the trading post set up there. He was going to go build up the trading post. So he went. So they moved further west to move out of that area. And he ended up setting it up. And everything was set up where every fur company, like Hudson Bay and American Fur Company, they all would set up a post and they would buy off the natives and get them liquored up and all that. It was more that they were fur buyers. Where Ashley, he was gonna do that, it seems like, but then he switched it over to where the fur brigades come in, and and he didn't build the post and like that, and they were actually trappers that went out there and was catching this stuff, and the trappers they would supply them with they gave them traps. Well, if you agree to go on as one of the trappers or any of that, they gave you a horse, a saddle, tack, a rifle, six traps, and a camp axe. Is what they gave you. If you in return, what the trapper had to do was they were getting half. They supplied the Ashley and them supplied the equipment, and then the trapper would get half. But you'd have to sell it back. You had to sell your half back to the company, and they had already came up with a pound price. That's how they were selling them. The hides was by the pound, and they were so they had a contract. And the other thing is if the price went up, you would still, and say if you weren't a free trapper, you're a contract trapper, they said $3, and it went up to the 12, you're at $3, they're not going to give you more. So I thought it was pretty cool that he started, the way we look at it, you hear a lot of times with the free trapper, he's the one that started, the guys that weren't the free trappers, and he didn't want to go put the money into the post and just buy it. He thought, well, I'll send the guys out to kill it, the guys that are the actual mountain men that we think about, and actually they didn't call themselves mountain men, they called themselves mountaineers, but it's pretty cool that I didn't realize that he set all that up. And a lot of it was based on things that didn't work out and failures,
Mm-hmm.
But, it's pretty cool because, that's, a lot of, we don't do exactly like they did on a lot of stuff. We got different traps, different equipment, but those were the forefathers of what we do today. If there was none of them guys, there'd probably be none of us.
Mm. Probably not. One of the things I came across was one of the first professions coming off of the first boat to hit here was trapping. When they saw wildlife, they started trapping them immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, we often joke about, trapping's the second oldest profession. It almost seems like it probably is.
Yeah. It's definitely the second oldest.
Well, the research I found, which I find interesting, logistically, I don't know how you set this up, but in 1825, the first one that I came across was in Green River, Wyoming, and then 26 and 28, it was in Utah, then it was in a different part of Wyoming, and then it swung all the way to Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, Wyoming. All the way down to 40, and then that was kind of the last one that really did much. And then individuals, this guy named William Drummond, actually started doing private rendezvous out west without companies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would you get mountaineers, if that's what they were called, how would you let them know, how would they know to go to Idaho one year, Wyoming the next year, and Utah the next year?
I'll tell you, if you're stuck out in the woods for 9 months, and you would be able to smell the party. And it sounds like a hell of a good time. I mean, it had to have been wild, and it had to be a stinking freaking mess. I mean, I made notes on it. The first one with the Ashley had, it was 120. It was 1825, and there was 120 trappers there. And I think it was 29 of them were deserters from Hudson Bay Company. There was some there with Jedediah Smith, and Jedediah Smith ended up I think it's like 1827, something like that, bought the Rocky Mountain Fur Company, and a couple other guys bought it with him from Ashley, because Ashley was a real smart guy. He could see that there was more money into selling the knives and the blankets and all that stuff than going buying the fur and doing all that. So he sold the part of the business he didn't enjoy and didn't make as much money. And you could see probably there was going to be a down escalation at some point, you know, that people are always going to need knives and guns and bullets and, lead. But, so the first one, 1825, wasn't the first one, but the first one he had was 120 trappers there. And then, like, in the 1820s, there was 500 to 600 trappers there, and, 2,000 Indians, and then there was, multiple fur companies and stuff. So, or the 1840s, so they, definitely 3,000 Indians from 5 tribes and several fur companies. So, and these weren't being like at the MTA with, 4,000 or 5,000 people are behaving themselves. I mean, if you get, 3,500 people that are drinking rock gut whiskey and you can kill people and nobody's going to do nothing, what a party. I mean, it'll be awesome.
Well, I mean, I've never seen horse races or foot races or dueling at our convention.
No.
But
no.
One of the craziest things in the early 40s, they came up with some rules. And you know what the main rule was? You're not allowed to bring rabid wolves into the rendezvous. What the hell?
you got a heck of a trapping convention if the only rule is you can't bring a rabid wolf. That is awesome.
I mean, apparently it was a problem.
It'll be funny next year, the NTA out of Iowa. That'll be the new rule in their thing, no rabid wolf. So, John Daniels, you make sure you implement that.
Yeah, no joke. Well, the crazy thing when you look at the profit, because I think it was the American Fur Company was selling a bunch of stuff. Then the British came in through Hudson Bay, and they could sell it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused all this, almost like a war over this.
And Hudson Bay was doing it on purpose.
Yeah, but they were still selling it at 1,000% profit.
Yeah.
So who's going to get that torn up if someone cuts your throat by 10% if you're still making 900% profit?
It seems crazy. But it did. It was, Hudson Bay and John Jacob Astor's American Fur Company. I mean, they put, and then they switched over, they didn't use the beaver for the hats anymore. But, by doing that, they put the Rocky Mountain Fur Company right out of business.
Well, you would seem like if that's what you were trying to do back in that day, you'd be better off ambushing the travel, the company going out so they just couldn't show up and they'd lose all the money than no profits.
I'll bet you that happened quite a bit.
Well, I didn't do it.
No. Because I wrote down some of the prices of what they charged, like at the 1825 convention for like coffee and stuff. Coffee was $1.50 a pound. Sugar was $1.50 a pound. Tobacco was $3 a pound. Fish hooks were $1.50 a dozen. Scalping knives, which, I mean, who doesn't need a good scalping knife? $2.50. We should start selling them at our booths with scalping knives. It wouldn't be $2.50. If they were $2.50, you wouldn't use it too many times. But that'd be funny at the convention to have scalping knives.
If you don't have those at your table, Jeff, you don't have a hair on your gonads.
I will. If we have any convention in the fall, I'll have some scalping knives in my booth.
What makes a scalping knife anyway?
I don't know. I think them green river knives is what they preferred. blue cloth was $5 a yard. Scarlet was $6 a yard. And lead was $1 a pound. So, like a blanket, 3-point Northwest blanket was $9. So basically, maybe like a beaver. You trade a beaver for a blanket, basically. Or maybe even two beavers. So the thing is, I'm sure that them prices were inflated because of the money that those guys, they're hauling that stuff in there, and they got, you got a captive audience. If you're at this convention and somebody wants a pound of coffee, they're going to go all the way from Wyoming to St. Louis to get a pound of coffee. You're just going to pay what they want.
Yeah. Well, liquor was $4 a pint, so that meant if you wanted a quart of liquor, that was a beaver. And if you're buying that for a year's worth, how many beaver are you giving away just to get drunk?
Probably all of them.
Probably. See, well, I broke that down in today's money. A dollar back then would buy $27.06 today, which is really sad about our dollar. So yeah. That meant that a pint of whiskey to them was $108.24 in today's money.
Ah. That's an expensive hangover. You can buy some good booze for that much today.
Oh, you can buy some good scotch.
The stuff they were drinking, I'll bet you that wasn't $100-some whiskey that we drink.
No, I can guarantee that was straight corn whiskey, non-aged.
Oh, yeah. No, that is some funny stuff with the rabid wolves. I'll be chuckling about that all night.
When I read that, I had to read it like 3 times. I mean, it was such an issue, they had to make a rule on it. No rabid wolf. So that meant these dudes had pets that were freaking rabid. What kind of... I mean, we think we're, we walk or strut around today because we think we're little bad boys. Are you kidding me? A rabid wolf?
You're not smart. You got to be tough.
Well, I think it was a great business move on the companies because, I can't imagine going from Wyoming to St. Louis, Missouri and back. Just to get supplies. That'd be insanity.
Yeah.
And them guys were ready for a throwdown after 11 and a half months of being out in the bush.
Oh yeah. Can you imagine if they'd all went to St. Louis? They'd have burned it to the ground. Especially if they showed up with the 3,000 Indians, there'd really be a fight. But I looked into St. Louis, and the thing is, you imagine back in the day, and I'm sure that there was a lot of, cutting and shooting each other over the furs and the dealing back and forth with supplies and all that stuff. But you can't believe the amount of lawsuits that used to go back and forth with people in the fur industry and then the trade goods and all that stuff. There was so many lawsuits flying around in St. Louis over all this stuff. It was too crazy. We think it's bad today with some of this stuff. It was worse then.
Well, just trying to lock them up? Lock up the other business? Is that what they were doing?
And people not paying. Thing is, if you, one, got trade goods to take into one of these, for the trades and stuff, let's say you get ambushed by some Indians, they kill everybody but you, you make it back, and they stole all your stuff, you stole all that money.
Wow, that was rough times, man.
Because reading about all that, it's like the Maricara, I think they were the ones that was attacking Ashley and pushed them even further west, the Blackfeet Indians out there, that was their land, and they want the guys out there killing the beavers. Plus, I'm sure that they were killing them themselves, and they're trading them and stuff, and nobody wants interloper into their trapping area. So
no, still today,
not Now all you can do is just yell and scream at the bridge when your stuff's, you know, stolen. You can't axe nobody. You know, back in them days, you know, you could actually axe them.
Well, I wish America would kind of go back to that a little bit. I mean,
yep.
Sometimes there just needs a little bit of axing.
Even if you couldn't axe them on the head, you know, maybe just like the end of one finger or something, just so everybody would know. You see somebody with their left pinky end cut off, you know that they weren't good at sawing or they were trap deep, you know. So he got 50-50 shot.
Good grief. Yeah, I mean, one poor guy, let's see if I can find his name. He actually, let's see. One of these guys had this brilliant idea that they were going to go send a boat to the West Coast, come in from the East Coast with all their supplies, sell the supplies, pick up the fur, all that money, go all the way to the West Coast, and because it would be cheaper than going back to the East Coast on the boat. It kind of made sense. Well, the dude gets all the way to the West Coast and his boat never shows up because it sank. So he's got all this fur and all this money, and he's sitting in the middle of Indian land, and he's got to go back through all of the mountain men to get to the East Coast. I have a feeling he didn't get another chance.
No. I'll bet he wasn't thinking, thank God my fur wasn't on that boat.
If he had been smart, he probably went to South America.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I just think about, I try to put myself in the mindset of, okay, you're in the woods for 11 months, and then you get one time to go to the store and make your money. And then you're going to have this money with you out in the brush. And I'm sure the percentage of trappers that didn't make it back, I bet there was as much robbery going on as there was from the Indians as there was from trapper to trapper.
Yeah. I mean, if you know somebody got paid and they're down there, you know, with their back turned, you know, Bob got turned down by the crows. And they got him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. who's ever going to know, you know? I mean, nobody's ever going to know. You hear that just like I do. And, you know, I've said it myself. You know, I'd like to be back in them times. And I think there's a lot of it, the romance part of it would be awesome. But, not having access to a shower would be no fun. You know, it's like we were talking before the show started. You know, it's 60 degrees, and, you know, my Yankee blood is thick, and I'm already sweating to death. You know? But we were going earlier, I had the air conditioning on the truck, and it was only like 58, you know? So, you know, basically, I don't want to suffer that much. I'll suffer when I have to, you know, to go like trapping and be cold on the boat. That's what I want to do. But, a lot of them guys suffered because, everybody thinks that you had to be tough. Your choice was be tough and do it or die. That was the only choices. I have other choices other than that, you know.
Well, you know, if a fur company's not going to put up with laziness.
No. That's like that movie about Hugh Glass, you know, most of it I was like crazy, you know, I'd rather have it where it was more accurate, but what I liked was like the first 5 minutes when they were, scanning the beavers in the camp and everything, that was so cool to see, you know, because, you know, that's probably what it looked like just a big shithole, basically, you know.
Well, yeah, and you're always worrying about the Indians coming up behind you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that would have been weird.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, every time, you know, and even it's like, you know, I go out and I get a hole in my hip boots, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta go get a different pair of boots, you know? I mean, these guys were, you know, trapping in cold weather with, you know, wool and leather on, I mean, Jim Bridger would have killed his whole company for a pair of lacrosse hip boots, you know?
I guarantee it. Well, I mean, you know, people think they want to live back then. I mean, if you want to try it out, you can just walk off into a national park with a backpack and six traps and, you know, even a horse. And I guarantee you, you're not going to be enjoying life in about 4 days.
No, because you watch that, which is a little bit different, but same thing, these survivalists, Naked and Afraid. I mean, very few ever make it through. They're all bit to hell. You know, I mean, some of them, you know, get infected and have to almost have their arms cut off. They got bit by so many mosquitoes.
Well,
you know, I can't even comprehend, you know, what them guys dealt with. It would have been miserable. Yeah.
When I was in Alaska in the springtime, the mosquitoes were unlike anything you can comprehend in the lower 48. You could drive down the road, Jeff, at 65 miles an hour, slam on the brakes because you had to pee so bad because there's no other cars around you. Step 1 foot away from your truck. As soon as you did that, you had 50 mosquito bites.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to have been waiting like every 3 feet along a road for somebody to have to go to a pee for that to even work.
Yeah.
Now you think about that, where you don't have DEET, you don't have, you know, off, and you don't have whatever those little things the turkey hunters carry around now that you got the little fans on them.
You
would just be miserable.
Well, when I was up there in Alaska, and we were going from Fairbanks down to Anchorage, and I was looking at like the road and, you know, and the surroundings, and I'm like, them guys that came up through here, you know, before, you know, in the old days, I'm like, it had to be tough. I mean, shit, there's absolutely no way. I mean, but they told us, you know, I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, maybe, you know, 20, 30 years ago, we would have done it, but, you know, it's like now, I mean, I'm not walking all the way to Alaska to the gold field, you know, them days are gone, you know, but I mean, the thing is, I mean, there was thousands of people that died. Going up there too, you know.
And I'm sure in the Rockies, I mean, that place gets brutally cold.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, they said that they wintered a lot. You know, like in, you know, if they get down the more in the prairies. You know, they winter down in there. You know, not on the higher elevations, which was probably a smart bet. But. No, they definitely were tough, you know, but they had to be, because, I mean, like I say, you only had two options, be tough or be dead, you know, and sometimes they were tough and dead, you know, because some guys didn't live, though, real, you know, like, you got some guys like Bridger and Carson and ones like that, you know, that lived all older, but, you know, most of them didn't live all, you know, when you see the thing that there was 29 killed by the Rickeries or whatever, or the Blackfeet, you know, gunned them down or arrowed them down. I mean, you know, every one of them was, you know, a younger guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have a whole bunch of 70-year-olds out there fighting the Indians out in the Rocky Mountains, so.
No. But, yeah, Go ahead.
But a lot of them guys, you know, I mean, when Ashley put that thing out in St. Louis to, you know, put out that flyer, you know, that, you know, one of the young men, you know, all that, yeah, I'm sure that there was a, you know, it was a real opportunity for a lot of them guys. I mean, probably, you know, a lot of them was just right from St. Louis. They might not have ever shot a gun before. You know, they didn't know nothing about trapping. I mean, basically, you know, you're just taking people that don't know, you know, just probably a bunch of more city people, you know. I mean, they either had to, you know, learn things real quick or starve to death, you know, because a lot of that, you know, that food and stuff they gave them, I mean, they still had to eat beaver or buffalo or whatever, you know. So, I mean, that because, you know, that tack's only going to go so far.
Yeah.
You'd be eating your horse and the saddle.
Well, I figured that's what the horse was for, actually. It was survival food.
Survival food with legs.
Are the rabid wolves, one of the two.
it definitely was a different time, you know, but it's pretty cool. I tried to look up to see, you know, my thing is I wondered, like one of them rendezvous, how much, you know, fur they bought. And they always concentrate mostly on beaver because that's what we were looking up into. But, you know, American Fur Company was up, you know, about 70 miles up on Mackinac Island. You know, they had a fur blind station up there. And, you know, I'm sure it wasn't all beaver. That's how Michigan got the Wolverine state deal. There was, I don't think there was ever any Wolverine here, or very few if there was any. And but it was so many Wolverine hides came through Michigan through the American Fur Company. And that's, you know, how we got it. But, you know, the thing is, you know, that you don't hear a lot about the raccoons and stuff like that, you know. It's always more the beaver.
But how could you, I mean, if they gave you six traps, you know they're, you know, they're beaver traps.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd have to get very creative to be catching fox with little bitty bones and raccoons and, I think today we just don't appreciate when we roll out of the house in a $40,000 truck with, you know, 3 or 4 dozen DPs and then a bucket full of snares and then a big tote full of coyote traps and another tote full of beaver traps and slide rods and all that stuff we have. I just don't think we quite appreciate that compared to the original trappers. I mean, could you imagine giving Jim Bridger a truck if there was roads out there with our equipment and the volume that we use it?
No.
He would just probably fall over with a heart attack.
If he didn't have some 330s, he'd have really been dangerous. I don't remember how many beaver they said he bought, but it was a crazy amount. You know, if he had had some 330s, 36 traps, he probably done even better.
So you couldn't find how many, like, fur was sold at these rendezvous? Because I didn't see that number.
No, I'm gonna keep looking into it, but, it had to have been a considerable amount because, the first time they went back, they had all these boats and stuff, and they would have been loaded with the furs or whatever they didn't sell, you know, or trade goods, but it had to have been a lot. You know, I mean, they ain't going doing all this for 10 beavers, you know, so I mean, it had to be. You know, how many did you say that them guys average caught? 60 beaver? So,
well, that would be for a year's, well, if they were a free trapper, it would be 62 beaver for $500 a year's income. If you're a company trapper, you'd have to catch 124 beaver for $500 for a yearly income. But I think I've read before some of those guys would catch upward to 600.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Say they caught, you know, 200, you had 600 trapper, I mean, that'd be 12,000 beaver, you know. And then you got the Indians on top of it, 3,000 Indians, you know. So, you know, I mean, you're talking 20,000 beaver, you know. It's probably way more than that, but, you know, just put a rough edge on it.
Can you imagine how big those beaver would have been when we started trapping them? I mean, I bet there was way more 90 and 80 pounders than there was 35 pounders.
Did they say that there was more beaver back then than there is now? You know, probably all in the West for sure, you know. It's like, most time when you're talking about, if, you know, we're going to go beaver trapping, you don't think about, heading out to Wyoming or, I'm sure the guys out there do, but, you know, I mean, the guys in the East don't, I never heard of anybody going out West beaver trapping, you know. Usually you go down South, you know.
There's actually quite a bit, I mean, still in Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Utah.
I know some of them guys catch quite a few rats out there, you know, so. You know, there's probably quite a few beaver, but they probably just keep them a secret so everybody don't come out there and get them. They've been through this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
195 years ago.
Shh. We ain't got no beaver out here. No, don't say anything.
No, no. No, no beavers. No, yeah. Yeah, definitely would have been, awesome to look through a mirror and, see it all happening.
I bet it'd have been I bet it was a lot more, it would be more scary, I think, than we realize. I mean, I really can't imagine having that wild of a rendezvous. You'd have to be a lunatic just to think it was all fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They said it started early summer and ended midsummer. So basically, the party went on from I don't know the seasons out there, but they, the first part of June to even the middle of July. That's a long time for a party to go on.
Well, I guarantee it was that way just for a simple fact. The mountain men probably never walked out of there with any money.
No. They probably was more indebted to the fur company, the ones that were, in the thing. They had to buy it. They probably was indebted. If it had been trapping for another 30 years, they probably never paid it all off. But I know going to the MTA after 4 days of that, I'm completely wore right out. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine going for a month and a half.
Yeah, and you're not buying squalls and drinking and telling how much.
Not that I'm against that, but I don't seem to go on.
Well, we've talked about this before. 25 years ago, our rendezvous were a lot wilder, and I bet they were even wilder when you were a kid.
I met my dad. I remember some of it. I remember somebody, something going on in the beaver shelter. The wildest one we went to was Kenton. It was a coonhound deal, but they had head trapping and stuff there. But that was the wildest one for all. Back in the old days. I mean, a lot of guys listening to one again, they're like, they're probably shaking their head, it was pretty wild, But, I was a kid, now I'd be more dangerous there probably in that same situation. Probably better I wasn't there.
Well, I can remember 20 years ago, people would start drinking moonshine, and they would get brave, and they would grab the No. 5 Bridger double long springs, and they would throw them up in the air and try to sling it off before it could hook onto them. Me and Cindy woke up one morning out of our camper and walked to the convention, and somebody had one of those the white tents like everybody uses with the sides rolled down.
Yeah.
It looked like someone slaughtered a pig. There was so much blood all over that thing.
I remember a fist fight that, I remember, there was fist fights as a kid, seeing them, even a teenager, and, but they were a lot of fun, to go to in them days. I had a lot of fun. I mean, we were chasing women. As a teenager, we go to them, cruising, chasing the trapper women, teenage girls, and, we had lots of fun.
Well, it's definitely.
But there was no rabid wolves there, no selling Indian women. There was none of that going on.
No. I mean, our conventions now have become, even from 20 years ago, way more civilized. I'm not sure if it's good or bad. I don't know either way, but it's definitely different.
Well, the stuff that went on, you figure what we did in high school, if you did now, at the same age, you'd probably be in some prison cell somewhere.
No doubt.
Back in them days, we didn't think nothing about, getting in a fist fight. You do that now, the cops are going to show up. Somebody's calling the cops. Everybody's got a phone, they got a camera. I've always thought about that. I'm glad that I didn't, go to high school with social media and all that. That would have been really bad. Mm. But, you look at, compared to, what we're talking about with the mountaineers, mountain men, and what they went through. I mean, in this society, the MTA had to cancel it. But with having a rule where at your convention, the only rule you have is no rabid wolves. Do you think that the coronavirus would have been canceled? The summer convention would have been canceled? No. No, it wouldn't have. So, you know, I mean, that's the difference between society now and society 195 years ago.
Well, I mean, you think about, like, I understand in the modern world why they did what they did. And maybe it didn't hold for everybody that goes to that convention. But Jeff, me, you, and Travis, do you know how nasty of a virus we got to come in contact with before we're even going to recognize that we got it?
Yeah.
I mean, most trappers, but think about them back then. It's not like you could just pull, you know, get your, like, I hear people talk about taking 2 or 3 showers a day. I mean, there was none of that crap. You probably didn't really have soap, and you're eating, you know, after you're gutting everything, and there was no gloves. Hell, the coronavirus, no one even known that it was there. I don't think.
No. Because the guy that, I can't remember his name, he used to run around with Wild Bill Hickok, and he was one that took a shower every day, and they called him a dandy because, you know, he took a shower every day. Everybody, they made fun of him because of it, you know. Yeah, I almost said, you know, what they probably thought, but I got in trouble with Kayla for calling my granddaughter that the other day, so I probably best not to say it.
Well, you know in modern language what that means when you call somebody a dandy, don't you?
Yeah.
Do you?
They're gay.
No.
I was using like a derogatory term on that. That's what I got in trouble with both the granddaughters.
Well, I guess it could be or couldn't be. The term, what it means now is, have you ever seen like a black person that dresses up where he's got the real shiny shoes and the real pimpy clothes and he's, you know, his hair's done just right?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 60s and 70s, that was a term for someone that was, they were dandied up.
Mm.
You know, they were dressed to the nines all the time. You know, they like, yeah, we kind of think of like pimping.
I think they meant it in a more derogatory thing back in Wild Bill's day. You know?
Probably.
But no, they, that's interesting. The whole thing is very interesting, you know, and I like seeing the, you know, the traps and all that. Do you want to say what the next one's going to be on, or rather not say?
Yeah, unless you know what it is.
Well, we're kicking around talking about, you know, the new house in Oneida community.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Will probably be our next one, because if you don't know anything about that and you like old new house drafts and everything, that's very interesting, which we won't go into it, but you know, the reason I brought that up was them guys were using them real heavy traps. I bet you when they started getting like them new houses, when new house came out with them in Oneida community, I bet you that was like groundbreaking.
I bet. Yeah we could definitely talk about that. Well, I do want to, since we're talking about this rendezvous thing, you've got a new Facebook thing that you started. Why don't you tell people about that? Because it's along the same lines, the history.
Yeah, it's on Facebook. It's history, trapping history and heritage. So if you look up trapping history and heritage, you'll see that there's about, I think a little over 7,000 members now. It's not like my group Trapping Talk or other groups. This is all old stuff. You know, maybe old trapping articles, you know, old new house traps, triumphs, you know, whatever is old in the trapping industry. It's not always, you know, just mountain man stuff. It does have that, but it's also like, you know, stuff with old Gorman's ads maybe in the 70s, you know, or, you know, Johnny Thorpe stuff. You know, basically, you have a lot of different meshing of collectors on there. But it gives you a good spot where if you have something old in the trapping and wonder what it's worth or something like that, you know, it's a good group. But it's not, you know, where it has all the advertisements from every person in the industry. We don't allow all that. It's just the old trapping stuff. And, you know, there's no fighting or doing. I ain't even got no rules in there because, you know, everybody knows, kind of sees what's going on. So, you know, it's a cool group. And Jim Hansen is one of the administrators, Dave Burt. And, you know, and Dave Burt's dad's got an awesome collection. Hopefully I can get him to show it on there sometime. But Jim Hansen, you know, knows all kinds of stuff. He's really good at, you know, putting stuff up. And been real blessing on there. And, you know, there's a lot of top collectors on there. Guys that, you know, they know everything. You know, so any questions you got, they're there to answer. So, you know, feel free to join and, you know, just enjoy it. It's a really cool group. I really enjoy being on.
I love a lot of the paper stuff y'all have on there, the advertisements and the covers and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's been a really cool group, and I, you know, it's nice to have it where there's no ego involved, or, you know, it's just a really cool group to be involved in. You know, a year ago, I thought, you know, we need something like that. I was looking into a lot of this history of the early trapping and stuff, and I thought, we need something to, you know, everybody likes that, and, you know, kind of, you know, pull people together on it. And like I say, I mean, there's been over 7,000 people join, you know, in the last year, so I think it's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to, you know, with the NTA closing and all that, if you're listening and you don't know, me and Jeff's putting on a school in Iowa this September, and we've got a couple of slots left in the first class. Unless the state shuts that down, I've already talked to the campground up there. Unless the state shuts it down, we're going to have it. Because I'm pretty sure by then, most of this stuff, the sanity part will be back. And we're going to be out in the middle of the woods anyway. So, you know, we're not going to be kissing each other or rubbing on each other. So we're not going to have to worry about being too close to each other. So I think it'll be fine.
Yeah. Anywhere that you're from, we're gonna teach everything we know, you know, as far as trapping and snaring, cable restraint. But, you know, where this school differs is if you're trapping big timber coyotes and they're running by your set and you're having trouble, and because you've got low populations of coyotes, or you're trapping frozen ground, you know, we'll help you with that. I've trapped frozen ground all my life in the snow. And me and Clint both trapped all the way to Alaska. So anything from trapping frozen ground to going on a trip out of state, out of, you know, up even all the way to Alaska, you know, we'll tell you everything we know about, you know. And there's not going to be any, you know, secrets that we are going to keep. You know, if you're paying to come there, you know, you get our undivided attention, and, you know, you're buying the information. So, you know, any way we can help you, you know, we will.
That's
the difference between our school and a lot of the other schools, is that, you know, trapping in the east is different than trapping a lot of places. Trapping big timber, trapping frozen hard ground, you want to get, you know, experience, you know, that's been there and been doing it. And it does make a big difference when you've done it or just talked about it.
Well, I mean, we both trapped to Alaska, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, all the way down to the, you know, Louisiana, and all the way up, you know, dang, well, I've even trapped in Canada. But I mean, there's really not anywhere that we don't have some experience.
Yeah.
Except for Massachusetts. No, yeah. Never been there.
No, I've been to Massachusetts, I've never trapped there, though. I was just driving through, chasing down a woman. So, yeah, 20 years old and stupid as a brick.
Well, I really enjoy it. I mean, I think talking about some of this historical stuff is cool. I think it's, I think it puts in perspective when we go out and do what we do in the fall. You know, it's, if you know the history behind it, I think it's just a little bit sweeter than just thinking about it in today's terms.
I think I've loved trapping as my whole life, but it's different now for me because I got the grandkids I take, and you know, and see them learning. But since my dad's passed away, it's like, you know, people might not understand if you haven't lost a parent, but you know, I like to think that you know, he's watching, and you know, I've always call him, you know, and tell him about. I caught a coyote here. In fact, the last time I ever talked to my dad, I was watching an F&T show, and me and the grandkids were watching one of the episodes, and the coyote that I caught was the last night when I got off the phone. Was on Thanksgiving Day. That was the last time I ever talked to my dad. You know, because I called him, told him, I called him at that spot that he always liked. And, you know, that's the history. You know, my history makes me love this. You know, if I didn't catch nothing, which I don't want to do that either, but but if I didn't catch nothing, I'd still just love, like, being out there and setting. I actually like setting traps. My favorite trap line would be is I go set the traps and then somebody else just go run them. I just love setting traps.
I'm the same way, man. I am the same way. Well,
I never set a trap that didn't have hope. I checked a lot of them that had that.
Well, we'll continue on with some of this historical stuff together. I just think it'll be entertaining and interesting. I'm sure there'll be some other podcasts probably want to, you know, jump on the backside of it, or YouTube videos, or hell, a TV show or something. I mean, once you start doing stuff, and if it gets some interest, everybody jumps on. So I kind of suspect that'll happen. But we'll just do our own thing.
Yeah, no, I guarantee that'll happen, because people are always looking for something new to talk about, and, you know, and all you can do. Just like normal, we'll just be doing our own thing, and they can, you know, just stay in the wake a little bit, so.
Yeah, they'd have to catch up with us, I guess, so.
Well, we got one in, so they have to do two to beat us.
All right, man. Well, stay on the phone, and everybody, we're going to call it quits right now, and we will talk to y'all next week. Y'all have a good week.